Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? Welcome back. This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology, covering all things e-commerce, Amazon, agency life, entrepreneurship. Today's title is Always Be Closing. We're going to talk about sales. We're going to talk about agency. I've got Joey Gilkey here from Sales Driven Agency. Sex Panther, I think, is one word that, or one phrase that's been used to describe him. We're going to have some fun just chatting it out. Me and Joey have talked before. I've been on his show. It was a lot of fun. Before we get into it, let's give a shout out to today's sponsor. This episode of Startup Hustle is sponsored by Gusto. Gusto has modern solutions for modern HR problems. Whether it's talent management, payroll, or onboarding tools, Gusto's HR platform has it all for you. Be smarter than your competitors. Try a 3-month free subscription now. Just sign up at gusto.com/startup hustle to get started. That's gusto.com/startup hustle. Joey.
Yo.
Welcome to the show.
Sex Panther to you, brother.
Hey, out of Knoxville, Tennessee. Are you in Knoxville today?
I am. Yep. We cool. are in the drippy cold East Tennessee, January.
I love it. I think I might get away for a weekend, and I'm looking at Tennessee or Arkansas just to drive the Jeep and get somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
Come on through.
Awesome. Well, it's a pleasure talking to you again. Full of euphemisms. I think that's the right word, if I can do that. But I think it's going to be some fun today. Sales is part of what I do. It's a big part of what I do. My agency wouldn't be here if I wasn't selling. At the same time, it's something that I think I'm in a beneficial spot of still doing sales at Marknology in some capacity, being able to limit a little bit of how much I sell so that the team doesn't collapse and we don't overscale and things like that. I'm super excited about chatting with you about that, because that's something very relevant to me even now in a totally. World where everyone needs what we do. But before we jump into just like, you know, the sermon, so to speak,
yeah,
let's talk a little bit about Joey. Like, how did you get into this space? Let's talk about how you became an entrepreneur. I think the origin story is honestly as important as anything else, because it's something that a lot of people can relate to. Did you always know you were going to be an agency owner, or like, where's Joey's, you know, story start?
Yeah, no, the answer is no. I didn't even think I was gonna be an entrepreneur, to be honest. I run Sales Driven Entity now, but that's not always been the case. For me, I actually started in full-time ministry, believe it or not.
I knew that. So I was setting you up for this one, because I was
smacking people in the head with a Bible and telling them to repent. I'm kidding. I didn't do that. But I was on a college campus. So my wife and I got married. I got married super, super young, like 21, and then ended up going into full-time ministry for one full year.
Okay.
Very committed. At the University of Tennessee, I was on campus there. And that's where I started. I thought I had a really unhealthy view of money, to be honest. And so for me, like, I was going to live this calling of being in full-time ministry. What was interesting is
mission
the calling, the thought of being a campus missionary, if you will, felt like a higher calling to me than business. And what's funny was I felt like I had a tug on my heart for years of like, no, I think that there might be something for you in the business world. So, I didn't have a whole lot of choice. It just kind of fell in my lap, a lot of opportunity that I couldn't say no to. So I got a really good opportunity to work in the corporate world, which was not fun, but it was really good for me. So I ended up going and working for a Fortune 100 company in the IT staffing world specifically. Okay. And I handed a lot of responsibility really fast. And I kind of climbed the ranks, if you will. So the opportunity out the gate was really good. And I got to climb the ranks, ended up building a sales team of 115 people. Hated corporate world, so I decided to leave. And I got poached actually by a consulting firm, a local in Knoxville consulting firm.
Can we pause right there? Okay, so just as someone that's fourth generation preacher's kid, okay, missionary to was a missionary kid to Africa, my entire community, everyone I know, my entire bloodline is, you know, some kind of pastor or preacher or evangelist or something in the ministry. Servitude, the mission, the cause, very like, can be all consuming, right? And when you're putting it through the lens of like, I just want to self-sacrifice and serve others. And it's hard to see that in a bad light. You know, what can be so wrong about wanting to love on people? But I would love just like, because I'm on the show, I'm about people getting to know me, getting to know who's on here. And I think there's a lot of people that go through these transitions where their relationship with money, how can I make money for other people, right? Like as an agency owner that's meant to grow businesses, if I can't do the same thing for myself, right? And whether you're religious or not, I think we have, a lot of people have upbringings where maybe their family didn't have a good relationship with money or it was taboo. You didn't talk about it. Like money is the root of all evil. You know, I remember a time when I was first starting my business, my family wasn't part of it yet. I work with my sisters now, but they weren't part of it. I went to a family thing, which I didn't go to often because I just felt negative and judged when I went. I was divorced at 25, wanted to be around the family. I went, I was kind of telling them about a couple clients I landed early, and like no one in the family really has money. And I was just, I had a little bit of positivity to share. And I remember like bringing that, you know, at this little like family thing. And I was like, well, Lance, and it was like three of them, an aunt and a couple uncles were like, you know, all of them had something to say about, well, money, you know, you shouldn't be driven by money. And, you know, money isn't this and money is that. I'm like, we're all poor and broke. And like, why aren't any of you guys like a little excited for me? This is not money. This is like work, you know, I'm getting a couple. So that's, I'm sharing a little bit of mine, maybe just to relate a little bit about a real life situation where a family or whoever is kind of contributing to that negative mindset. You talked about being married at campus and you skipped over a little bit, but then you went into the corporate opportunity. How big of a decision was that to leave like campus ministry and go into that?
It's huge. You know, I think a lot of my identity was wrapped up in that. You know, my identity was wrapped up in being a leader in the ministry and in the mission. And so for me, you know, leaving something where I found a lot of my self-worth and identity, which is ironic, you know, and so it's all about like self-serving, you know, like serving others and laying down yourself. But in all actuality, my identity was wrapped up in it. And so that's why it was really interesting because, again, I thought money was the root of evil, if you will. You know, like I only saw all rich people who were screwing people over at the time. And for me, it was just a really unhealthy view. And that's all I saw, right? But what's ironic was I felt like I had just as much in my own heart that I had to deal with. And I was dead ass broke, you know, like... And so I think for me, that was kind of a realization of like, dude, you got something going on in your own heart. It has nothing to do with, and that was kind of the out of the heart kind of flows out of the mouth. Right. And so I think for me, I think money is a magnifier of what's already in you. So if you're good and you're a good dude and you care for people, money's going to amplify that. And if you're not a good dude, money's going to do the same. But I think poverty does the exact same thing. It reveals other aspects of you. And so it was definitely an interesting journey for me. You know, I think I wrestled with some conviction there for a little bit on whether it was the right decision or not, you know, but I think that thankfully I made the decision I did and I'm at where I'm at now, where I feel like I'm impacting a lot more people in the business world than I probably would have been in the ministry.
Yeah. And that was something that from my family to a church I went to many years later, you know, there was a minister there that just having like a men's breakfast. And he said, you know, he just randomly was like, Andrew, you know, your ministry could be business and helping grow people's businesses. And, you know, I had just never had anyone in the way I grew up say that anything ministry wise could be, could touch money or business. It was like these other different roles, musician or evangelist or speaker or whatever the case might be. Right. And it was life changing for me to have somebody like of, you know, of that status, you know, say something like that over me. It was just kind of like this light bulb. And I'm not very religious. I'm not religious at all now. I'm spiritual. And, you know, so I'm not saying to any of those things. But for me, it was just like I'm someone that's been cultured by growing up abroad in some ways. But I'm also like had a very tight or close-minded upbringing. And so hadn't even seen people in business or in the church doing business like at a high level. That was also something we didn't see. It's like, you know, you didn't just didn't see, I didn't see that much business.
I think honestly, a lot of us are very self-sabotaging.
Yeah.
You know, like I think because of that inward like conviction of, I'm not sure I should be making this much money. I think sometimes we can put a ceiling on ourselves and say, you know what, this is good enough. We're good here. And, you know, to each their own, you know, but I think they're, deal with the hard issues there. And so that's what I had to do at least.
Yeah. Worried that the money might make me worse than I am, kind of thing. You know, like, I don't know what's going to happen when I get it. Okay. So I just wanted to relate to that. I don't get to meet very many people that go through that. So you're at a staffing company, and I know depending on what industry you're in, you can do very well, especially if you build a team of 100+, let's be honest.
Oh yeah.
Okay. So it's kind of a tiered thing that grows from there. And, so you got poached to a company in Tennessee.
Yep. Yeah.
What were you doing there?
It was a local company. We were doing risk management consulting and commercial insurance for high risk manufacturing companies. Super niche. So we'd come in to these super high risk manufacturing companies who had massive insurance premiums because they're super high risk, right? You have a lot of workers' comp issues. So we'd come in and we do risk management consulting to help them eliminate some of the risk, which therefore drops their premium costs and things like that for their insurance. Real sexy. But nonetheless, I got poached to kind of head up sales there and build it from scratch. They're at probably about $1 million in top line revenue when I got there. I was there for about 18 months, had some success. By success, I mean, we went from 1 million to 9.5 in 18 months, and then ended up getting poached again to be a VP of sales of an agency. And that's what thrusted me into the agency world about, I guess, 10 years ago now.
So you went from relationship building, and what people don't understand is like campus ministers, or whether you're going to the Congo or a campus or Hawaii, that doesn't, like, you're going and creating something out of nothing, and you're selling them probably the hardest thing to sell.
And nothing they can hold.
Give up all your freedom for a better eternal life that you might have. And you know, like it's a very hard thing to sell. Then you went to like IT staffing, which if you're in the right industry is kind of easy to sell because everybody needs it. I don't know what you were in, but it's like, if you were selling e-commerce talent right now, it'd be insane, you know, to again, selling something probably pretty hard. Everyone needs insurance, but no one wants to pay for it. And no one trusts insurance salesmen. At least I don't, for the most part, it's like, not that I don't need what you have, but like, are you listening to me?
Most don't do a whole lot. It's kind of like a real estate agent. Like, you don't really do that much. You fill out some paperwork and, you know, you send it to the carrier and they get it done for you. It's like,
yeah, you're connecting me. And then from there you went to an agency world, which like I've created an agency, like, you know, I obsess about agency world. I study it now. I read books, all that kind of stuff, but I don't come from an agency background.
Yeah.
I went more into like as an e-commerce manager and learned a lot of my experience inside of brands that way in corporate. Completely different thing. Fast paced. You can only sell as much as the team can produce in some ways. Like, let's talk about, well, advertising is a little different. Why don't you tell it in your own words? Like, so you become a VP of advertising there based on your sales experience. So what do they have you doing?
Yeah, I was actually the VP of sales at an agency. So there was a HubSpot agency. It was right when HubSpot hit the scene. So it was like it was right when they rolled out their HubSpot partnership. So I was VP of sales of a HubSpot agency that focused on medical practices, which also not super fun.
What's a HubSpot agency? Does that mean they come into, like, let's say a company and then get them all set up on a CRM? And
yeah,
like,
it's more like inbound marketing. So content marketing, yes, some advertising, but mostly it's all about inbound marketing. How do we generate inbound leads for businesses? And the marketing automation platform of choice was a HubSpot platform.
Okay.
So we put them on HubSpot where they would run their marketing automation, and then we would just run the automation for them, or the content marketing and marketing automation for them.
Okay.
So that was our stick. Kind of same thing. Like, came in, they were really small, you know, and I had a lot of promises at the time of, you know, equity partnership on the future and all those kind of things that, you know, I felt like I was making this guy a lot of money. I felt like I was making the previous owner of the previous company a lot of money. And I was like, I'm out. There's some other things that happened there, but I was out at a certain point.
Okay. So out of the HubSpot agency and mm-hmm. on, so what happened after that?
That's when I finally started my own thing. So that was okay. My journey to starting something. What's ironic, people don't know this, or not many people know this. I started a funnel building agency. So, because here's my thought process. I'm incredible at sales. I know how to build sales teams. I just sold, you know, $6 million worth of agency services to, you know, for this agency. This should be a piece of cake. And little did I know, I love selling it. I love building sales operations. I really hate delivering. The marketing side of things. I'm not a marketer, right? I'm a sales guy. And so I come out the gate and I'm landing these really, you know, decent sized accounts. And then I'm like, oh shit, I gotta
deliver.
So retention wasn't great. And pretty quickly I realized, because what was cool about that though, and all this kind of worked perfectly, was I got around a bunch of other agency owners, right? I kind of found a community of other agency owners. And, I was very different, like kind of like you. I came to the space very different. Didn't have an agency background. Didn't have even a marketer background. But here I am now. I'm an agency owner, and I'm selling massive deals while these people are struggling to sell. And they love delivering. They love marketing. That's why they got into it. They didn't get into it to sell, whereas I got into it to sell, not to deliver. And so I was like, "Well, shit. Maybe there's something here." So I tapped a few of my buddies on the shoulder, and I was like, "Hey, like, let me build out some sort of. Let me just help you with sales. Let me get some leads for you." And so that's what turned into my last company, which we exited back in end of 2018. But that was a company called Tribe. And Tribe was essentially an outsourced sales lead generation company. We would do outbound sales for agencies.
Yep. I know that well, that model.
Yeah, you're getting hit up by them all day, every day nowadays. But at the time, we were really early to that space. And so there was kind of a blue ocean for us. And I think I got out and exited at the right time. Thankfully, and built what I built now. But yeah, it was an interesting, I started an agency for very short, and I was like, I'm not doing that. I don't like marketing. And then decided I'm going to help agencies. And since then I've been doing it for now 6 years, give or take.
I love that. I know a couple individual guys, that have companies that are like brokers basically. Mm-hmm. And they introduce brands to, you know, three agencies, and those agencies compete for them. And trying to give them like that kind of white glove service of working that out. And it's worked very well for them. Cause you're just leveraging the relationships you already have to bring the best to the table, you know, and saving people that time, kind of like an IT staffer, but not, you know,
right.
So definitely understand that space. And then also like what I was bringing up kind of at the beginning of the show was that deliverable piece. Right. So, you know, I also am a co-owner in a property management business and property investment business here in Kansas City.
Cool.
For me, it made a lot of sense. One, I had a best friend that was leaving the military after 7 years as a captain, military intelligence, to like go start doing investing in real estate. And I'm like, I want in. Like, if he's involved, I want in, because, you know, just the ability to break down a market and the numbers and everything was like, he's just an amazing human. I was like, I want in. The other thing was like on the Airbnb side of what we do with property management, there was so much like that's the same as e-commerce. So photography, building listings online, automation systems,
chat
process,
communication,
chat.
Yeah, like, I got, it's like nine. I'm about to have seven, but I had nine, or I have nine Airbnbs currently.
Okay, in the Tennessee area.
Yeah, all in Knoxville.
Cool. I love that. Well, we'll have to talk about that a little offline.
For sure. The cash cows.
Like, yeah, but for me, it was like, look, his team is one of the best in not just the city, maybe the Midwest, the sales team that he's built over the last 3 years. And I benefit from that, as you know, but they have their own thing on the sales side. And so I've been here for the last 3 years watching my best friend and partner build a very good sales team. And, you know, just we build each other's businesses, talking to each other and things like that. And, you know, as a straight sales guy, they just think about always be closing. Yep. You know, closers close and shooters shoot and, you know, close the deal. As an agency owner whose job now is to serve my team.
Yeah.
Okay. And set them up for success. And there's a sales side of me that's hungry, that's like ruthless, that's like I can go get whatever I want and eat. But I also know that if I over inundate or overwhelm the deliverable side of the team, that I will crash and burn. And my reputation's burnt, trust is burnt, like, you know, all those things. So it's definitely a give and take that I've had to navigate as someone in between versus just being a go kill all you can eat kind of mm-hmm. team. And that's a unique position that, you know, I have to tell a sales guy now that's working for me or Brian or like, you know, because I've seen him have an amazing contractor or to like do amazing projects on these houses. Sure. They're flipping every. You give him three projects and that guy crashes and burns. He has two and he's amazing.
You know?
And you're like, well, I have these deals. I can make all this money if I just push. And he says he can do it. And yeah, because everybody wants to get paid. Everybody wants that opportunity. But you can overwhelm the deliverable side. And smart move on your end to move to Tribe. I think it was called Tribe, right?
It was, yeah.
Okay, so to move to the Tribe model, which was outsource sales and just focus on your strength, what you guys do best. Mm-hmm. Where'd you end up after Tribe? So going from all outsourced sales to now the sales driven agency.
Yep.
What are we looking at?
Yeah. So after we exited that, I had some time to kill and some money in my pocket. So it's kind of chilled for a little bit. And I was like, I want to get back in the game. I'm just not sure exactly what I want to do. But the biggest pain point of running Tribe was if I send leads to a black hole, I'm sending leads to a black hole and they disappear. And so what I mean by that is oftentimes agencies just don't have their shit together when it comes to having a sales infrastructure or a sales operation, or,
yep,
you know, maybe they're decent at sales, but it's the founder who's stuck selling. Like in your case, like you're incredible at sales because you know the product, you know the market, you come with authority and trust, but if you put a salesperson in your position, you're probably going to take a hit to your conversion. And so you're sending leads into this broken system and it's frustrating because I can't control that, right?
Yep.
When I was running Tribe, it was like, I'm going to send leads to this business and I have no control over what happens when I make that handoff.
And if you don't close, eventually they'll stop keeping you on retainer
to be their sales team
because you've overwhelmed them. Yeah.
And it's, what have you done for me lately? And it's, you know, it's a typical agency thing. If you're do anything from a lead gen perspective for agents as an agency, like, you know, the pain point of your client saying, what have you done for me lately? Or, you know, their CRO sucks on their website, but you're driving amazing traffic to them. It's like, well, I can't control your CRO until you give me the CRO business. And so like same thing here, is just different side of the coin is sales instead of, you know, marketing. So that was a big pain point that I recognized when I ran Tribe. It was one of the frustrating reasons why I ended up hating running it and just decided I'm done with this. And someone gave me enough to walk away. And I was like, cool. So that then said, I'm going to get back in the game, but if I'm going to get back in the game, I want to solve the whole problem.
Mm.
And that's when I said, I'm going to build sales driven agency. And what I actually did before I even started the offer, I think people should do this before they roll out new offers, is I paid my ideal customers for 10 minutes of their time. I said, hey, I'm going to pay you. I want 10 minutes of your time. I have nothing to sell you right now, but I would like to have something to sell you in the future. That's why I'm reaching out. At the end of the day, I know I can solve a problem for this space. I've been in this space for a long time, but I don't know how to put together the offer that's going to fit this space. And maybe I'm making a lot of assumptions and I'd like you to shoot holes in it. So I'd like to have 10 minutes of your time. I'm going to pepper you with questions. I want you to shoot holes through everything that I do, and you have permission to tell me and shit on my idea if it isn't good. And so I did that about 15 times. And that's what created the bulletproof offer that I have today at Sales Driven Agency. You know, years later, same offer. And that's that we come in, we build the whole sales operation, right? So we, from beginning to end, all the sales processes, we architect all the processes and frameworks and systems. We actually have a recruiting team in-house. So we hire your salespeople, we train them for you. They're your people. We just do all the hard work of getting them there, onboarding them, training them. And then we build out the tech stack and enablement, scripts, templates, campaigns. And we tie that all together in a bow and it's yours. And we teach you how to drive it. So that's kind of our model. And that's when I said, I'm going to get back in the cockpit, because now I can control the success. I can control lead gen. I can control follow-up. I can control closing. I can control account handoff. Because I built it, right? I built it for 300 plus agencies now. And so it's automatic. It's easier. But it's a massive pain point. And so
I love that. I love that tip on those informational interviews, or even, you know, paying them. Maybe that's getting them to a dinner. Maybe that's like doing whatever you do to get in front of them. I learned that the hard way, which was probably 1,000 rejections. But that's why I think we're one of the best in the space, is that I know the problems that these brands and manufacturers at a high level are having in e-commerce or Amazon before they do. I'm talking to their problems that they had in the meeting before we got on the call, you know?
Yep.
And knowing that, like, you know, knowing your competition, knowing your competitor, knowing your client and everything that they need. That's why I've gone full service with my agency, which is very hard to deliver on every level. But that's why I'm also so confident about my team and what we do, is because I solve for all those things. I was tired of having clients or brands go out and get bad photography that doesn't work for Amazon. Or, you know, I launched my own warehouse in 2020 for my brands that I'm building, because I've talked with 300 plus 3PLs in the last 10 years. They all operate differently. Some of them are slow as the Titanic in regards to moving, and I'm operating in e-commerce. I can't have a slow, I'm only as good as my weakest link, you know, or supply chain. And so everything you're saying really hits home. And being able to say, hey, I'm a full service agency, which is basically like a fractional employee to a company.
Oh, yeah.
Or a fractional team.
Department. In a lot
fractional
of cases.
Department, exactly. because no one's just getting one person over here. It's not like one person is an Amazon expert. Mm-hmm. It's that we've got all these teams, from creative to advertising to whatever, and handing them over that playbook to say, hey, we've created an Amazon store for you, or we've got your business optimized and running, and here's how we go. And this is, you know, we keep doing that for them. But it's also like, instead of them just outsourcing it to us, we are now part of their team. So, you know, if they take that back over, they have systems and process, and that's kind of our play.
Yeah.
So, very relative and genius, and continuing to innovate, to where you can control. I think that's a big, 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 big part of it. And the same reason I'm building my own brands is I'm tired of losing for things that are outside of my control,
100%.
You know, and as many of those things as you can get, you will. So what does that look like? Actually, before we go into my next question, why don't we give a shout out to our sponsor for today's episode, which made this all possible. You use Gusto as well, right?
Oh yeah. For 6 years now.
Me too. It was something that took me a little bit to get to. I am someone that when something's working, I'm not trying to break it. And, you know, was doing stuff through a localized like CPA bookkeeping firm that had taken care of me. But I wanted to be able to pay people internationally. I wanted to be able to be in Tennessee and send payroll and not have to do those kinds of things. And
compliance.
Trying to stay lean in a lot of areas is something not easy, being in the cloud. But if we're not there, then we're getting left behind. So once again, shout out to our sponsor, Gusto. Question from them. Are you tired of long hours because of payroll? Save more time with Gusto. With its automated process, you can file taxes and manage payroll in a matter of minutes. What are you waiting for? Register at gusto.com/startup hustle to get a free 3-month subscription now. That's gusto.com/startup hustle. Joey, back to the question I had for you here. You've used the same playbook since like you launched the company in regards to like what you're offering, your bulletproof offering. You're going into companies, you're going to the company you want and saying, hey, let me help you build out your sales team. How do you know what companies are using maybe like, let's say a founder like me plus one or something like that, the ones that you know need a more sophisticated a more sophisticated process? Like, what's your methodology for finding those companies?
Well, the good thing is there's probably 2% of agencies that I feel like have a really, really good sales operation that doesn't involve the founder, maybe even less than that. So the world is my oyster kind of thing. I can probably throw a rock and hit an agency that needs our help. So that's one thing. But I would say outside of that, for me, by the nature of how we price, like I can only work with 7- and 8-figure agencies today. Now we're about to roll out a 6-figure, and I'm about to do the same thing where I interview people and pay them for their time as we roll out an offer for the smaller, you know, the much larger market, but the much smaller agency.
Yeah.
But for now, I only work with 7 and 8 figures. So I know typical agency operates at about $100,000 per full-time employee, rough estimate for revenue. So if they have 25 employees, they're likely doing between 2.2 and 3 million. 2.5 would be a safe guess. So I know, one, they can afford us. Two, LinkedIn/Apollo.io or other data resources tell me, do they have sales titles internally? Is their sales title just like a sales leader title or a VP of sales? Because if so, they don't actually have salespeople. They just have like a some guy who kind of does the pitches and proposals, but he's not going out and drumming up new business. He's not doing follow-up and nurturing and closing. And I would say most agencies don't have that. And so for me, that's what I'm looking for is employee count, because no one's going to tell me their revenue, but because I know the space well enough, I know your revenue within a million or so, I can guess. And then do they have sales titles? And if that's the case, if they have less than 2 sales titles, I know I can come in and blow it up pretty quickly.
I love that. I have a question for you, because I'm getting you here and I'm going to interview you to help myself.
Let's do it.
And hopefully it helps some of the listeners too. So one thing that's been, you know, I've got a guy working on commission only. Mm-hmm. What we sell, there's so many people that need us too. It's like, you know, shooting fish in a barrel kind of thing.
Right.
It's less about finding them. And we have a great inbound funnel that I've just built through years of content and trust and reputation and biz dev and things like that.
Great.
But outbound is something we're building, and we've had some success testing other stuff. One thing, I guess what's on my mind is like a big role of me still staying in the sales, whether that's at the end of the funnel or not, is that most sales guys or men or women, whoever, don't necessarily are not thinking of the team first, right? Mm-hmm. They're trying to get paid. They're trying to get paid. They're trying to go get new business.
That's their role. Delivery team.
Correct. And so for me, that's a huge concern, as like us getting results and quality of the team and not wanting to lose employees, which is a huge thing right now in our space. If there's not me as the gatekeeper to, you know, it could be getting a narcissistic brand owner. It could be talking to a misogynistic, you know, manufacturer owner or VP of marketing. It could be a team that's not digital first and that's so archaic that it will slow my entire team down. It could be, you know, a team not willing, like maybe they built the brand themselves and they think they know everything. Mm-hmm. They know they need help, but they're not going to listen. You know, there's all these different kinds of clients outside of just landing them that takes someone with, not genius. What's the word I'm looking for? Almost like emotional intelligence to know those people when you're in the early phases, like you're in the early phases of that. And for me, every single brand that slips through that is one of those things is a huge negative on
the pain in the ass for your team.
Yes, exactly. And so for me, it's been more of like, I can get someone to follow my template and be able to close and keep close rate high and things like that. But getting that built into the culture of my sales team is something very concerning for me. Like, I would love to just get your feedback on that or like tips or ways that you combat that.
I'm gonna give you two different answers. One is I think it does come down to what you just mentioned, culture for the sales team. I think that one thing that I have always taught and one thing that I do internally in my team, I have a pretty decent sized team myself. And for me, because we're the same way, I can get some terrible clients if I allow it.
Yeah.
When it comes to bringing on and onboarding a salesperson, right? Like, it's easy to hire a salesperson. It's easy to fire a salesperson. It's not easy to make them successful. It's not easy to onboard them, not easy to train them, not easy to manage, lead, and coach them. And so that's why I think it's important. What we do is important, right? We come in and build those frameworks out to make sure that's successful. But part of that is product market training, right? And part of product market training that you assemble for your salespeople is, what offers do we have? What's our product? What's the things that we do for people? But it's also market training. Who is our ideal customer profile? What does that actually look like? What are call recordings that show ideal customers? What are not ideal customer profiles? What are call recordings that show those, right? So you have examples of both, right? Sometimes it's the positive and the negative you got to show.
Yeah.
And then the third is decision maker profile. So there's the ideal client, which is the company itself. Like, yeah, we want to work with some dope fashion brand, you know, that's doing 50 million in sales currently, right? Okay, that's easy to spot. But what if the founder, like you said, is a total ass, or I don't want to work with them? I'm allowed to cuss, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Say whatever you want.
Sorry.
It's even more allowed if you're ex-religious. So, I mean.
so that's the company, but then you have the decision maker of like, who am I going to be interacting with? Who's my team going to be interfacing with? So that's the product market training. You also have to do like mindset training. Like one of the first things that I do is foundations training for salespeople. What I build for clients is foundation sales training. And that's all about like, what's the sales mindset, right? Like the people around you are dependent on you. They're dependent on you financially, right? Because the revenue you generate eventually goes to pay the bills for those families yeah. that are on your team, and they don't control revenue. So that's on your shoulders. You should feel a healthy weight there. The second is training them on simultaneously. You also are the gatekeeper to their emotional bank account, right?
Yep.
And so there's that. Well, if they're in a commission only or a high bonus structure type of model, right? Which I'm a big proponent of base plus commission, having a really healthy commission model. Then they're a hunt. They eat what they kill. Well, that. You know, there's a conflict of interest there. So what do? I incentivize you to walk away from deals with money.
Okay.
So I'm not going to pay you the same as if you closed the deal, but you don't have to do the hard work of closing it. If it's a deal that we could close and it gets to a certain stage in our pipeline and you identify that it would be cancerous to our team, it would not serve our team, and you walk away from it and you send me the recording, say, hey, Joey, I walked away from this deal. Could have closed it. Here's the recording. I just didn't feel good about it for the team's sake. Dude, I'm striking you a check. I don't care. Thank
you. How does that, can I ask, like, you don't have to give me your numbers, but theoretically, how does that work? What, like, let's say you got salary plus commission to close a deal. What's it look like to not close
a deal? I get 25% of what I would have.
Okay.
So, average deal, my salesperson is going to make about $4,000 in commission. So I usually give them about $1,000.
Okay.
And that's how, I mean, that's fair for them because realistically it's easier. They don't have to do the contracts, they don't have to chase down proposal payments, like just scotch clean. And if I agree with them, you know, then I'm happy to pay you because you preserve me a lot more money I'm going to lose by losing an employee, have to find a replacement, train them, et cetera.
I think that's genius.
Yeah. And I don't think people want to do that because people say, oh, it's performance. Like that is performance. It's just not the performance you want from a revenue perspective. It's a performance you want from a retention and profitability perspective. We just don't think about it. So that's number one answer I'd give you.
Well, that was gold. So thank you.
Good,
number one.
Good. The second that I would give you is at the end of the day, if sales is doing their job, meaning they are going out and they're hunting and they're killing, you know, then there is going to be that tension in a people business like an agency where you might stress out the delivery team. Now, I would argue I'd rather have more revenue to go fix the delivery problems than have no delivery problems, but no revenue, you know? So that's one mindset I have to always remind myself, be quick to invest in solving the problems. But what I tell people, because this does happen, is if you feel as though you need to tell your sales team to slow down, momentum is one of the hardest forces or whatever. I think it's called a vector technically, because I get corrected all the time, but I think I like saying it's the strongest force in all of creation is momentum. It's hard to create. It's also hard to stop.
In dating, in business, in anything.
It is. It's huge.
Fitness. Like, yeah.
It's huge. And so you don't want to stop momentum. So how do you do that and take care of your delivery team? Well, I think of growth in three categories. Pipeline, where are our leads coming in? How many leads are we getting? Inbound, outbound, referral. Win rate, how many of those leads are we winning into paying customers? Client value, what is a client worth to us? And all three of those, if you pull on all three of those levers, you can have that hockey stick growth. Well, in some seasons, it doesn't make sense to pull on all three of them. So what I would do is I would say, hey, don't stop. Don't slow pipeline down. Don't slow win rate down. I'm going to organically slow win rate down by saying, hey, you can no longer offer any of our packages less than, let's just say your average deal is $7,500 a month. You can't charge any less than $10,000 moving forward. You can't charge any less than $12,000 a month moving forward.
Yep.
Because what that's going to do is it's going to lower your win rate, but it's going to keep revenue high, right? So I always give the analogy, so I'm probably talking too much, but
no, you're
hopefully
not.
It's helpful for someone out there. I give the, there's a story I like to tell. There's an entrepreneur who goes and gets his hair cut from this barber. He's been doing it for 20 years, ever since he was a kid. And he's sitting there and he's, you know, the barber's name's Jack. It just seems like a barber's name, right? And Jack's cutting his hair and the entrepreneur's just sitting there and He's doing it like normal, great haircut. And he could just tell Jack's off. And so he looks at Jack. And he's like, hey, man, you just seem off today. What's going on? He goes, and he just opens up like the floodgates. He says, man, I'm stressed out. You know, I'm back to back to back haircuts. I'm running late on this one, which makes me late on the next one. And people get mad at me, you know, and I got to pay bills and rent's going up. And the entrepreneur goes, that's an easy fix. Double your price. I've been coming here for 20 years. You've been charging me $10 a haircut for 20 years straight. And Jack looks at him and he goes, I can't. I'm not going to go from 10 to 20. I'll lose half my customers. And he goes, do the math. He goes, you double your price and lose half your customers. You do the same amount of revenue, but now you have twice as much free time in your calendar. He goes, and I guarantee you're not going to lose half. So that's the way I look at sales too is, okay, let's say your win rate's 20%. Well, what if you double your pricing and you drop to 15%? You're still net positive and you're taking on less deals and not stressing out your team.
I can 100% echo that statement. Like with even, I'll use the Airbnb model. You know, during the pandemic, we made all kinds of pivots to keep our cleaners in business, to keep investors paid, yeah, to make it work, right? With staycations and booking first responders and people that need to quarantine and all kinds of stuff, just keeping it rolling. And when you've got 22, you've got a few people under you that rely on that work, right? Whether it's the property manager, whether it's the cleaners, whatever. And so, you know, priority one was, it was lowering rates, you know, because the cleaners are getting paid regardless if there's a clean, which was like priority one was, we don't want to lose our people.
Yeah, it's hard.
And see what happens, you know? And so, but what happened was our quality of guests really went down. Our properties didn't change.
Yep.
But instead you start getting staycation, you get people that aren't wanting to trash their own house, you get
parties.
Instead of people coming to KC to like, you know, go to a conference or a Chiefs game or whatever, you get some clowns, you know? And so it's been a progression coming back after 2020. And like, we didn't lose money any month in 2020. And I'm proud of that for our investors or for us or whatever. But we had to pivot to make it happen. Well, it's been coming out of that where one was getting a property where we were able to charge, I think, like $250 a night on a weekday. Okay, so a higher end property that's really nice in a good area of town that I was able to do, like when we were decorating it out, because the investor that we had wanted to do all the bells and whistles and let me design how I wanted. So I went more high end, and we saw that we just started booking it out. It's been booked out. It's booked out all the time. Well, the thought process being, okay, let's stop doing these individual rooms like we had in one property. Let's like bring it to a full house, raise that price, and just raising the prices across the board. And so we started going from our booking rate dropped, right? But the amount we were making per clean, we started being able to pay the cleaners more to be there longer to do a better job.
Nice.
We started, you know, making more money because maybe the house is sitting empty and there's electric costs and gas costs and during the weekdays, instead of just booking those out. And have been making more money than ever before by raising our prices across the board. 100%. The difference was like the difference in strategy, even from 18 months, it needed to change. It's easy when you've done it before to kind of see that, but when you're like, you're going from a $85 a night price point to maybe 140 or 150, you know, to get a kind of different customer, it's, you got to take a leap of faith, and the investors might not believe in what you're doing. And, you know, they're like, why are these days staying unbooked? And, one is either like do it yourself so you don't have to respond to investors, so you can do whatever you want, right? That's one thing, control it. And the other is, you know, proving the model and showing them that too. But that was a little bit of a longer story, but my point being, like, can definitely attest to that. And it gets, you know, as a, it can get scary to just like raise your prices. You got relationships with people, you don't know how they're going to respond. You convince them one time that your value is at that, like, are they going to believe that your value is double that? You know, there's a lot of things going on mentally. Oh, yeah. But huge and great advice. Thank you. I'm definitely, especially number one, I think that's incentivizing to not close is something I'm going to take away from this and try to put into action. As we get close to the end of the show, we're coming up on 45. I would love for you to just like, you know, we're going to have all your contact information in the show notes for anyone that's listening. So we don't got to touch base on that, but with our last 5 minutes or so, what's something as a person that's built multiple teams of 100+, still building teams for other people. What's something you want to leave freestyle, with any of our listeners today? This is a show by founders for founders. So a lot of our listeners are running some kind of team of their own.
Yep.
What's something you'd leave with them?
Don't skimp on talent. Overpay for talent. I think that that might be an obvious for some. It might not be for others. And I think for me, you know, one of the frustrations I had when I was running Tribe was I think that for the longest time, I tried to fill seats with bodies because I could find the best deal for a person. And since then, I have realized the headache that comes with that versus paying a little bit extra now and taking a small hit. You know, like my highest paid employee is going to make $425 this year. And he's not in sales, believe it or not.
Wow.
And so I'm happy to strike that check because he oversees our entire delivery team. I don't have to manage him. I don't even have to talk to him. I want to. I enjoy him. But I don't have to. And I am more than happy for him to build wealth through my company. One, because he's never going to leave me. He's not going to make that money elsewhere. Two, because I trust him and he feels as though he really owns something. And so he has no need to leave elsewhere. He's making more than most entrepreneurs probably listening to this. No offense to you guys listening. And so for him, I know I'm going to have the best talent. He's never going to leave me. He's loyal to me. You know, and that's something I would say is a worthwhile investment for me. And that's exactly what it is. It's see your people as an investment, not as overhead.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what they are. They're investments.
That's amazing.
So I think when you think about like a real estate investment portfolio, you want to add the best properties that are going to add the most value to your portfolio. Like your company is a portfolio and the people that you install in your company are those assets. And so you want to take care of them. You want to set aside OPEX like you would in real estate, operating expenditures, things that come up, right? You want to set those aside to take care of your assets, your people. And so at a certain level, I think at the very beginning, it's about your offer, right? It's about nailing the offer. It's about, you know, product market fit. But at a certain level, when you figure that out and you figure out how to somewhat grow relatively systematically, it becomes about the people.
Yep. That's where I'm at. And that's definitely where I'm at, which is like, look, my full-time job now, whether it's sales, whether it's whatever is like, and that's not even coming from the religious background. It's just like, I think that's just a principle of leadership. My job is to protect and serve my people to get the best results.
Yes.
Whatever that takes. And I know that I personally as an agency am an agency that probably overpays on labor. Like if someone was to evaluate my books and, but I'm nothing without my people. So, you know, investing in them for some of them, it's career jumps. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, e-commerce, like they were doing GMing of a restaurant or whatever the case might be and moving over. And so giving them that stability and investing in them until they get up to speed. But yes, well, I'm one of those agrees with.
Dude, it's, I'm a big fan of value-based pricing, right? I want to price what my clients pay us, I want to price it according to the value that I bring to that company. I think it's reasonable that if I can drive $1 million in revenue for you, that I should charge $100,000. That seems like if you put a dollar into the slot machine, you got 10 out, it'd probably be a pretty decent gamble, right?
Yeah.
And so if that's what I believe we can do, right? Same thing. If I can drive 10 million, then I'm probably going to charge you $500,000, you know, more than likely. If I can actually attribute what we do to do that. Now, what's interesting is if we do that with our clients, why don't we do it with our employees? It's about the value they bring to the company. And what's ironic is that we don't think about this. We drive more value for clients and therefore can charge more when we have more valuable employees who can help us drive more value for clients.
Hmm.
And so why not pay them more because they're helping you charge more?
I love it.
That's the way I look at it.
I think one other thing here that we can say to the founders, maybe that aren't in the position to pay an employee $425, mm-hmm. is, you know, at the beginning I was using interns from the high school program. I was using UMKC graduates or college internships. My sisters were my workhorses because they believed in what I was doing. And, you know, so you do whatever you have to do to get by.
Yes.
And for me, that was young, inexpensive talent at the beginning. I didn't want to go outsource because I believe what we were doing needed collaboration and I needed like butts and seats to listen and watch and learn versus like process sent overseas. But I think what got me here is not what gets me there kind of thinking. Mm-hmm. And there was a turning point where, okay, girls, now, even if it's going and getting someone that makes more than me and the girls, it was like, we need some talent.
Yep.
And so trustworthy talent too, but it was like, look, if we want to get some people that are at a managerial level to be able to like do this in the corporate world or whatever the case might be, we're going to have to pay. You get what you pay for. And it was like, it was definitely that what got us here is not what gets us there.
Yeah. It's top filling. That's what we call it. So you got to top fill your talent. And like you said, what got you here, you got to top fill with better soil on top. And sometimes that, you know, that's not a slight on who got you here. You know, there's an aspect of loyalty here, but we're also in a world where it's meritocracy and we got to pay bills. And so if we feel as though the people who got us here can't get us there and there isn't a role for them, I think that unfortunately we have to promote them to someone else's company, as I like to say.
Yeah. But there is no one that's left Marknology that didn't leave with, you know, 4 0s, 5 0s, more like 5 0s plus, you know, growth. And so,
Good. Awesome.
You know, feel bad about that if you want. Right. But it's also like, hey, being here and whether we promote you to another company or you move on yourself,
you're
like
part of their journey, you know,
exactly. And you can see that. And so, you know, I tell our team, at the end of the day, when you leave here, if you choose to leave or whatever the case might be, a reflection of us, and you can have them leaving and saying he was a tightwad, or you can have them leaving saying he was super generous. And, you know, what do you want that to be? They're an extension of your reputation and your trust, regardless. I could hap on that for another hour, but it's been, it's been an absolute pleasure getting to chat it up and getting to hear more about your side of things versus mine. I know I've left with a couple of nuggets, that I'm putting in my tool belt. So I really appreciate that.
Well, thanks for having me on, man. And thank you guys for listening.
Yeah, of course. And once again, shout out to our sponsor for today's episode, Gusto. Manage your HR needs with Gusto is the way to go. Make it easier to onboard talent, handle payroll, support your people in any way. It's what we're talking about this whole show. Gusto's platform is powered by advanced technology, so talent management and payroll processing will never be the same. Try Gusto for free. Sign up at gusto.com/startup hustle and enjoy a 3-month free subscription. Joey, if I'm in Tennessee, I'm going to hit you up. It might be as early as in 2 weeks or something. I'm taking a road trip. Try to find
a tree
house.
I'll take you to my 70-acre ranch and we'll shoot stuff.
Yeah, that sounds like a blast. it's been a pleasure. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
Startup Hustle's brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.